Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe or hit the bell icon. I'm your host, Fritz Bessemaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with James Ehrlich. James, welcome to the show.
Fritz, always a pleasure to see you.
Hey, let me introduce James. He's based out of California. And he's an entrepreneur in residence at the Stanford University of Medicine, but he's also a faculty member of the Singularity University, a senior fellow at the NASA Ames Research Center, and an Obama White House and now Biden Harris appointee of the Joint Task Force on Regenerative Infrastructure. But the reason why we wanted to talk with you is you're also the founder of Regen Villages. Hey, again, James, welcome to the show. I see you're wearing your Stanford sweater.
Yes, so right.
Then I really want to start out with a question. What is an entrepreneur in residence and how do you become one?
Sure. Well, it's an interesting question and one I think that's created a lot of curiosity even on campus at Stanford. But basically, I was the first official entrepreneur in residence appointed at Stanford in its 128-year history. I had moved my way essentially through the School of Mechanical Engineering, which is where we did the basis of the research behind Regen Villages, to now being at the School of Medicine. And in order for me to create the Stanford spinoff company, which is a for-profit impact vehicle as a Dutch holding company, in order to do that, I had to reduce my position financially at Stanford because it's a nonprofit organization, and to take a essentially an entrepreneur in residence role, and that's essentially how I took this title. So I can continue to lecture and do my research at Stanford and work across the different engineering silos and campus activities, as well as do the work that I'm doing with Singularity University and these opportunities that we have, both terrestrial and space-based with NASA and the Canadian Space Agency, which we're working on some interesting things there. And then under Obama, now continuing under Biden-Harris, is this really interesting nexus of regenerative infrastructure and being able to really understand the importance of looking at integration of these things, food, water, energy, waste to resource management, connectivity to housing and other kinds of external services.
It all comes together. And so the role as an entrepreneur residence is trying to find a business model to make that happen, to make that work.
Well, we actually have the business model. We know what the business model is, which is essentially asset-backed residential real estate married with tech. So Regen Villages is also a software company, and we have a patented Village OS software stack, which is really unique because it looks at this idea of using software machine learning to both design and then operate these self-reliant communities. And it's really what we believe wholeheartedly is the best use for machine learning for public goodwill and for the benefit of human and planetary flourishing.
James, I have to ask you to take a couple of steps back for the rest of the audience, because you're talking about villages, you're talking about machine learning, you're talking about singularity, a lot of things coming together. You founded Regen Villages. Could you, for the audience, define what Regen Villages is and what does it aim to do?
Sure. Regen Villages was founded as a Dutch holding company, as a for-profit impact vehicle to specifically address urgent housing crisis globally, but to connect the new development, the new build and retrofit developments around passive homes, energy positive homes, with a marriage of open space, of high-yield organic food production, clean water, renewable energy, and waste to resource flows that are all circular. So essentially, these neighborhoods, I like to say, are a bit Amish, in the sense that if the power goes out or there's a disruption to a water main or some supply chain issues around shelves going bare with food or whatever, that these very resilient neighborhoods humming along because they have what they need to survive and thrive. And that's actually how humanity used to live pretty much up until 1950. So there was a Rockefeller Foundation report that I found incredibly enlightening in 2011, which basically said that up until 1950, 75% of all humanity, back then was about 2.5 billion people, lived in small, self-sustaining communities. And then the Rockefeller report went on to say that by 2050, the inverse would be true, that you'd have 10 billion people, 75% of whom would be living in very brittle coastal megacities. And I grew up in New York City, and I can tell you there's a lot of vibrance and excitement and interest in urban environments. But also, cities are brittle, which means that when they break, they typically break badly and for a lot of people simultaneously. So our research at Stanford, you know, initially at the Center for Design Research, under Professor Larry Leifer, was with the Solar Decathlon competition about the single house context of being energy positive. And I came to Stanford in 2012 and became part of this team to look at this, you know, research question. And about 5 minutes into the cohort, I went to the professors and I said, you know, it occurs to me that a smart house inside of a dumb neighborhood doesn't make much sense. And I was really lucky and blessed to be surrounded by these professors who have what's called design empathy. And they said, this is a really interesting thing that you're bringing forward. Tell us more. So one thing led to another, and Regen Villages, the research initiative, was born. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I self-funded the, I'd say, primary basis of this research initiative, so I could have a good portion of what was going on about Regen Villages happening kind of just adjacent to campus, off campus. And then we decided collectively to found this Dutch holding company to bring this urgent need forward, that we can actually create a residential real estate development group and software company that can see the exponential growth and spread of these kinds of self-reliant neighborhoods all around the world.
There are a couple of questions I have to ask with this great story you're sharing with us. First of all, how's a New York native? Okay, I can understand from New York at a certain point you're coming to Stanford. But why, of all the places in the world, why set up a holding in the Netherlands? What's the reason to do that there?
Well, a lot of great reasons. And first of all, when I moved from New York after my undergrad at NYU out to Northern California, I didn't go right to Stanford. I actually started a software company, and we were doing video games and special effects software for motion pictures. We were working a lot with George Lucas, Industrial Light and Magic. So we were actually north of Silicon Valley, north of the Golden Gate Bridge. And I was surrounded by farms, a small plot, organic, biodynamic family farms. And I started to learn about these farmers and their produce and their artisanal ways. And that was really mind-blowing to me, that the sort of whole system approach to nutrition. And that really was such an inspiration for me that I started to film the case studies of these family farmers and tracking where the food was going. That actually turned into a popular television cooking show that I produced and directed for over a decade called Organic Living. And if you can imagine, in the year 2000, 2001, the word organic literally market tested as manure or compost.
Yes.
So the transformation that happened over 3 or 4 or 5 years was remarkable. The apex of that show, we were reaching 35 million homes a week on national public television. And I had a best-selling companion cookbook that I co-authored on Hachette. But part of our travels were, because we were doing this cooking show all around the world, was to the Netherlands. And I spent quite a bit of time with these artisanal local farmers with the greenhouse, controlled environment farmers, with these wonderful 1 to 3 Michelin star chefs from Amsterdam, Den Haag, Utrecht, you know, all over Netherlands. And most importantly, what I was picking up from my experiences in the Netherlands was this amazing culture that was living 900 plus years below sea level quite effectively, mm-hmm. with incredibly low tech solutions. And that's a really visceral kind of learning experience that I, you know, that became part of me. So when we decided to found our holding company, it was kind of an easy decision for us to look at the Netherlands and this quite very receptive government and an area to imagine our first pilot communities. And most importantly, just that's where our CTO is based and we've got people on the ground in the Netherlands and I feel quite at home there.
Great. Okay. Well, being Dutch myself, I'm actually quite proud of hearing that feedback. So thank you for that. Now, the concept of region villages, has it been built? Are there already cities out there or villages actually?
Well, the answer is there are no region villages communities as yet. We are in appraisal on several different land opportunities. We got really close in the Netherlands, as you recall, in a place called Almere, which is about a half hour due east of Amsterdam. And we were received initially a preliminary approval by the local government to do 203 homes on 25 hectare, which is about 60 acres or so. And we were really trying to get to 300 homes so that we could do a couple of things. One, provide a 15% rate of return to our investors, the baseline rate of return. But number two, and most importantly, was that we could take at least a third of that housing inventory and have it be for social affordable access so that we could really be and tell the story that regenerative resiliency isn't just for wealthy people, right? It can be for everybody. And unfortunately, the local government changed in that moment on us. There was an election and a new government came in. And to be fair, the new government was inundated with these single family initiators who had heard about our work in this area and heard that there was good land opportunities there. And the local government really couldn't hold back this tidal wave of single family initiators who wanted to kind of eat up our land grant and build their McMansions. Okay. So unfortunately that's what happened in Almere, but we have several appraisals ongoing right now in Norway, in Denmark, in UK, in the Netherlands as well, in Portugal, in UK, Canada, here in the US. And most recently we opened up an office in Chile, in Santiago. So we have, we're a very strange multinational startup. But the main thing I want to say is that the eco-village movement is very strong. And the intentional community movement and co-housing, collaborative communities are very strong. And these are essentially organic farms with neighborhoods next to them. And where the people in those neighborhoods are engaged with their, at least their food production and some other aspects. So we've been able to learn from this and see, you know, what is working and what our software can do to be able to enhance, improve, and then mitigate against, you know, climate risks.
I think I'm getting a picture here. Now, earlier in the show, you said the world is flipping from 1950 to 2050 where people live. So we're going to live in cities. Does this mean you also see a future for a region city or a region mega city?
First of all, I'm a neighborhood guy. Let me just get that right out of the way. Yep. You know, I don't want to bury the lead. I'm a neighborhood guy, always been a neighborhood guy. Even when you're living in Manhattan, New York City, you live, your neighborhood is your block. It's your neighbors. That's the situation. You look out for each other. It's very common around the world in that regard. The truth is that up until COVID, I was basically Chicken Little. I was basically on a soapbox telling people that eventually cities will become less friendly. People will start to want to leave the city for the suburbs and the countryside, where honestly, those places are not prepared for such an influx of the cities beginning to, you know, flood outwards. Then COVID hit, and all of a sudden, all of our predictions came true. So I went from Chicken Little to a pundit in, you know, the last 18 months, pretty much. So we've seen this exodus now, palpable, demonstrable exodus from urban areas to suburbs and even to the countryside. And so we know now that there is going to be a shift, that pendulum shift away from cities and urban areas to these more managed, flourishing style communities, which is what Regen Villages is promoting and representing all around the world. So the answer is, can we do a town infrastructure, you know, village pods connected to each other? The answer is absolutely. These are called like garden cities. And it's something that cropped up in Denmark and cropped up in the UK. There was quite a movement, you know, to allow people who are urban dwellers to have some kind of farm plot during the long grow season that they could, you know, can and preserve stuff for the long winter ahead. And those farm plots actually started turning into residential, you know, areas. So I believe wholeheartedly that we can take 400 or 500 home village enclaves and connect them to each other across larger swaths of land where you have the permaculture and the food capture and harvesting and cultivation and all of those other pieces connected to those lily pads of self-reliant neighborhoods, where primarily if there is any kind of failure in any of the systems, you don't get a district scale failure. It doesn't become a domino effect, right? You're able to isolate that to a block or a house or a group of homes, not you know, the entire town or city that would go dark, for instance. So I'm not averse to looking at these places. You know, for instance, we talked to Virgin Hyperloop about this idea of knowing where their on-off ramps would be, you know, which would typically be maybe in the middle of what used to be called nowhere. But once you have an on-ramp to a high-speed transit system, all of a sudden you could actually imagine a town cropping up around that. But for us, the most important aspect is making sure that the open space is preserved and conserved around the energy positive buildings, so that essentially you have your critical life support systems as amenities for those neighborhoods.
Okay, I'm getting a picture. Now, earlier you mentioned that Regen is also a software company using machine learning. Can you take us a little bit along how you're using this technology to do what you want to do?
Sure. Well, we start first with the main pain point, which is you have farmers and landowners with agricultural space that are aging out. Their children don't want to take up farming as a family legacy. But at the same time, you have local governments and regional governments that have locked that land up as agricultural land until such a point that those suburbs become untenable and they need breathing room, they need more housing, which is a critical issue. So Regen Villages is this beautiful overlay. So our Village OS is first a generative design platform to look at that open space, that agricultural land, through a different lens. The blend of several hundred new build energy positive homes in a road facing kind of village complex. But then 2/3 of that land, radial open space for that infrastructure of food, water, energy, waste to resource management. And that essentially using this machine learning, generative design, a Village OS software, that the landowner, developer, government, and even community can kind of leapfrog the very expensive ecosystem of architects, engineers, planners, consultants, so that they can at least get planning approvals and rezoning on that land, okay, and also engage with local neighbors on that topic.
Does that mean you're using the machine learning just for the design, or do you also see it being used for the operation of?
So the software is bifurcated. So the first part of the software is, it just helps people get the planning permissions they need, simply put, on previously zoned ag land, but done in the right way. These neighborhoods are going to be beautiful, flourishing, long-term, positive outcome kinds of communities, right? But the first is the design side. Then once the blueprint is generated by the software then becomes the local server. I call it the farmhouse server that doesn't rely on the cloud. It doesn't rely on, you know, on anything except, you know, what's happening in that village itself. We connect to the cloud through a thin pipe just to share and learn from other communities in similar climate zones around the world. But that's anonymized, fully encrypted data that has nothing to do with people being the product or people being the service. It's a very important point about data, right? But the key is that the operational software then looks at patterns. It looks at how people are how living, how the infrastructure is working to improve or mitigate against risk. It's using real-time data, and it's using predictive modeling so that it can anticipate when something might need to be changed or replaced, when some things are doing really well, and we can, you know, record historically when those things happen to get back to that as a reference point or a reset point. So the exciting thing about the Village OS, to be perfectly honest, are the things we don't yet know.
I got
right?
that.
Because right now, if you look at any neighborhood or city, you have energy, you have water, you have waste, you have food. All these things are separate, siloed pieces. They don't know about each other. They can't learn from each other, improve or mitigate. And that's exactly where the Venn overlay that our Village OS software sits in to help those communities thrive.
Okay, now mentioned you're also an appointee for the Biden-Harris Task Force on Regenerative Infrastructure. This idea or this vision on the future, is that also then discussed in that context? Accepted?
Well, so it was active under Obama, incredibly active under Obama because, it was Obama. And it was a joint task force between the White House and the State Department, OSTP, which is the Office of Science and Technology Policy. And then we went really quiet for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I think you can understand why that happened. We won't, you know, name the name. It's a bit like Voldemort from Harry Potter, but I think everybody knows who I'm talking about. And then, you know, because now we have this new administration that's come to power. And now the big issue they've been facing, of course, is dealing with COVID, but also dealing with getting this new infrastructure bill passed. And that just happened.
Yes.
Okay. Now that that bill has been passed, 1.2 trillion, it should have been 2.5, but okay, 1.2 trillion. Now it's a combination of really understanding how that money is being parsed, where it's going to be spent, and what the focal points are. So, and, you know, interestingly enough, maybe it's a double-edged sword, but we do have a U.S. subsidiary, but we are a Dutch company. So we have to operate from that perspective through our U.S. subsidiary and then relate that back to our Dutch holding. But I'm really confident and hopeful that now we've got, you know, the right people, you know, back in positions of power with budgets. And we're working with some really great folks here in the U.S. from a, I'd say, systemic industrial perspective on how we can see the replication of passive homes, you know, onto open space land and create these neighborhoods, especially addressing social affordable housing. That's the, you know, 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Okay, so that's what you as a person are looking for on that joint task force.
Listen, it's not just about the joint task force. It's everywhere around the world. What we do in West Europe, North Europe, UK, US, Canada, all great stuff. But what we really want to do is to show that, just like with the Tesla model, here's how the new middle class and upper middle class want to live. So that when we bring this to rural India, sub-Saharan Africa, MENA, ASEAN, okay, that these populations have heard about it, they're excited about it, and that we can take maybe €100 million 400 home built community, what it would cost to build in North Europe, to rural India, let's say, for 10% of that. We could build the same 400 homes using local earthen circular building materials, provide the same regenerative resiliency, but for €10 million. Then it starts to be this really interesting business model of industry, government, and appreciating the fact that every one of these villages that we build literally reduces burdens on government, on healthcare systems, on brokering peaceful, happy, healthy places, and in creating the circumstances for new economic models outside of cities, back into the peri-urban and to the rural areas that have been sorely neglected now for all these decades since 1950.
Now, is this also the story you told at COP26, the UN Climate Change Conference?
Oh, I tell this story to everybody.
Yeah. But specifically at COP26, how did you get there? So somebody noticed your story and said, hey, you need to be on stage here.
Well, so as this happens sort of as follows. From the very beginning, Regen Villages has been focusing on sovereign wealth and pension funds as a mechanism for funding industrial scale of a modern eco-village movement, full stop, okay? So to do that, we also understood that we had to be where policy and policies are coming from. And so we've spent this time from roughly 2016 through 2019, early 2020, making these kinds of presentations. We're active member of the European Network for Rural Development. We're part of the EU Commission on Smart Rural Villages. We're an ambassador to the EU Bauhaus Roundtable. And in early 2020, finally, we were appointed to a UN Climate Secretariat Resilience Lab, and of which we've been an active participant in workshops and symposia, all focusing on this idea of solution sets of as many of the 17 SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, as possible under one umbrella. Regen Villages, when you look at it and you really understand, you look under the hood, Regen Villages represents every single one of those 17 Sustainable Development Goals. When you realize safe, efficient, energy positive housing married with permaculture and water and waste to resource management and renewable energy, that all of a sudden deals with everything from education and children's rights, women's rights, cultural adaptability, all of that is under that one umbrella. So that's the reason why we were invited to be at COP26 in Glasgow. Harold Vonnefeld from our office in Amsterdam went to in person to Glasgow. I opted personally to reduce my carbon footprint by doing my presentations virtually from Stanford. That was the one contribution I felt like I could make and not flying to Glasgow. As much as I really wanted to go and network there, I decided not to do that for that reason. But we did a low carbon, kind of exchange with planting some trees and doing some interesting work to bring my one colleague over for the in-person. So we were there and we did present. I like to consider what we do as a kind of almost like fungal inoculation, that we've sort of inoculated this solution set into some of the thinking there. But I want to be perfectly honest that the solution sets never got out of these very small breakout rooms, 40, 50 people. Whereas the big main stage had you know, the 500 plus, you know, oil and gas lobbyists and others. So, you know, we understand that we're still very much fighting the good fight and dealing with this battle. But most importantly, we wanted to go there to explain it's not just about carbon and carbon sequestration, right? And about, you know, limiting these things, especially in emerging economies. But moreover, it's about creating and building new communities that can restore soil, restore aquifers, you know, feed and nurture people in such a way that we end up reducing carbon in any case from that perspective, but we're actually doing the right things so that we're creating a hospitable planet for progeny to come.
Hey James, it's fascinating listening to you and extremely inspiring. So in the last couple of minutes of the interview, I just want to ask you a couple of personal questions. Where do you draw your inspiration from?
I stand on the shoulders of so many people who've come before us, to be perfectly honest. These are not original ideas, okay? It's not about my ego. I'm a vessel, okay? Mm-hmm. So I stand on the shoulder of Buckminster Fuller, of Rudolf Steiner, of Bill Mollison. There's a global eco-village network that you cannot ignore because these are people who have, you know, physically gone out there to build these places and make these things happen. There's an agri-hood movement that's strong and growing around the world. There are good players in real estate development. There are good players in government and in finance and in these family offices. And we have to do really is just bring that constellation together. So I'm inspired continuously also by my team. I'm surrounded by a team of people who have been with us through all kinds of stormy weather. We've suffered unbelievable slings and arrows over the last, you know, 6-7 years since founding the company. But they stick with it and because they believe that this has to happen globally.
So final question, James. What's driving you? What's making you, you could say, keep on going?
Well, of course, I'm selfish too. I want to live like this. Yeah. I mean, I do. I think there's billions of people also who feel the same way. I look into my son's eyes and I you know, when I first started this research initiative, I heard him ask me a question 30 years from now, which was, where were you and what did you do? That sticks with me. And so every single day I wake up with that question, where am I and what am I doing? The other thing that drives me is the fact that I know it's possible. I've seen it. I've sat at these long farm to table meals where I'm feeling great. People aren't even speaking the same language as myself, but we are laughing and crying and breaking bread together. And we know what's possible, that we ourselves are capable of living strong, thriving, flourishing, healthy lifestyles where we're connected to our natural ecosystems and not disassociated from them. In other words, it's all possible and feasible. And within the next decade, it's really an urgent call to action. We just simply don't have the time left anymore to ponder the solutions. We have to act, fund, build, realize, study, rinse and repeat the solutions over and over and over again.
I'm going to ask you one bonus question. This is the brand called You. How do you want people to remember you?
How do I want people to remember me? When they're living in a beautiful, self-reliant, strong, and resilient neighborhood that happened to have been designed by our software and operated by our software, or it happens to be a Regen Villages branded community, that they take a deep breath and they're grateful for what they have, and that they don't need for themselves or their family and their friends to live in fear anymore.
Hey, James. I want to thank you so much. That's an inspiring vision to end the discussion with. I want to thank you so much for sharing your work, what you've done, how you got there. And I wish you good luck with Regen Villages. Thank you.
Dank u wel. Heel goed. Thank you, Fritz.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.